it's usually vanilla and chocolate. Oh, you know, okay. Like at a, you can get a twist at the Dairy Queen, can't you?
Can you? I don't know. Wow. Are you talking about like the chocolate and vanilla?
Mm-hmm. Twisted.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you can get that at Dairy Queen.
Yeah, you could at some point, but apparently the 32-degree freeze is the thing. There are still some, there's a drive-in in the Brainerd area or a ice cream place that's only open, you know, in the season, Triangle.
Oh.
That's in northeast Brainerd, that's sort of the hidden gem kind of place. That, and so we'd love to hear from you if there's a special ice cream place where you go. Sometimes there's convenience stores that you know that give the giant scoops of ice cream, so you know, you don't always tell people. It was in Reamer.
Mm.
Very cheap for the biggest cone ever.
So for me, growing up visiting family in Indiana, they actually had an ice cream truck.
Mm.
You know, with the classic tunes.
Fun.
The wall full of all the different things you can order. And I thought it was such a thrill every time I saw it, because yeah. I never saw it growing up. I lived in the country.
Right. I never saw an ice cream truck. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we were, you know, if you live in the rural, kids don't get to see that. It's not usually driving around. Now there's some food trucks that are ice cream trucks.
That's true.
There's.
But it reminds me of the Simpsons bit where it's the hottest summer in Springfield, and they keep hearing the ice cream theme song, and they're like, they come out, ice cream, all out of ice cream.
Oh, no.
And then guess what comes next is the chili truck.
Oh, no.
Chili, fresh, hot chili, Texas-style chili.
Oh, my gosh. We'd love to hear from you. You can text 218-326-1234. Coming up in our next hour, we are learning about a special send-off for some athletes to the 2026 Special Olympics USA Games that's happening in Bemidji tomorrow. And then we're talking about the Northwoods Writers Conference. It's an opportunity for you to hear writers all next week. Is it next week?
Yep, next week.
In the evening, so we'll be talking with Sean Hill. And at 9 o'clock, Headwaters, your host today is Kari Headland.
We receive support from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
And thanks also to AW Research Laboratories in Brainerd, reminding private well owners to test their drinking water annually. Common well contaminants such as bacteria, nitrates, and arsenic are odorless, tasteless, and colorless. More information and test kits available at awlab.com.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We operate translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Since 1976, Northern Community Radio has been telling the stories of the people and land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. Keep KAXE people powered into the future with your support now. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you. Now it's time for headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. President Trump and other leaders at the G7 summit in France will wrap up their talks today in the French Alps. Trump's efforts to end the war with Iran have gotten a lot of attention at the summit, along with the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. Executives from tech companies, including OpenAI and Anthropic, are attending sessions on artificial intelligence and economic growth. Republican Congressman Mike Collins of Georgia has won the GOP nomination for a November Senate race. Sarah Callis with Georgia Public Broadcasting reports.
Collins, who has represented Eastern Georgia since 2023, addressed a crowd in a barn an hour south of Atlanta when the race was called.
My plan as your next U.S. Senator, I mean, it's simple. I'm just going to use my business experience out there to build on the record of results that I've already delivered in Washington.
Collins received an 11th hour endorsement from President Trump over the weekend. His opponent, Derek Dooley, had been supported by Georgia's Republican Governor Brian Kemp since the beginning of his campaign. Collins will face incumbent Democratic Senator John Ossoff this November. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Callis in Jackson, Georgia.
Billionaire healthcare executive Rick Jackson is the winner of Georgia's Republican gubernatorial runoff. He defeated the state's lieutenant governor, Burt Jones, who was endorsed by President Trump. Jackson will face former Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms in November. In Alabama, Congressman Barry Moore has won the Republican runoff for the Senate seat being vacated by GOP Senator Tommy Tuberville. Moore defeated Jared Hudson. The congressman was backed by President Trump. Everett West won the Democratic nomination and will face Moore in November. Tuberville is running for governor of Alabama. In Oklahoma, another candidate backed by the president, four-term Congressman Kevin Hern, has won the GOP nomination for an open Senate seat. It was vacated by Mark Wayne Mullen, who became Homeland Security Secretary, replacing Kristi Noem. The U.S. economy, Jeffrey Epstein, and immigration were among the issues raised to Vice President Vance yesterday when he appeared on the ABC TV talk show The View. NPR's Daniel Kurtzleben reports.
Host Ana Navarro asked Vance about Trump's recent comment that he, quote, loves the inflation.
What he said, Anna, what he said is that he loves the fact that the inflation is going to come down when this war is over. That's what he said.
That's not what he said.
The hosts were broadly critical of the administration and also asked Vance about the Epstein files and the Trump administration's deportation tactics. Vance's new book is called Communion, Finding My Way Back to Faith, and is about his conversion as an adult to Catholicism. While many politicians write books as preludes to presidential runs, Vance has not yet declared his 2028 intentions. Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News.
This is NPR News from Washington. There's a court hearing today in New York City for Luigi Mangione, the man charged with killing the CEO of United Healthcare. Bruce Kahnweiser has more.
The hearing will deal with a questionnaire for prospective jurors. The 28-year-old Mangione is accused of gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson on a city sidewalk in December 2024. Officials have condemned the murder, but Mangione has garnered outsized support from a public that has grown frustrated with the country's healthcare system. Mangione's trial is set for September. For NPR News, I'm Bruce Kahnweiser.
Mangione faces up to life in prison without the possibility of parole if convicted on federal charges. A new study provides more evidence that COVID-19 vaccines may also protect the heart. The findings are published in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine. Researchers followed more than a million U.S. military veterans who were vaccinated in 2024, including about a third who got a COVID shot. The study shows those who received a COVID vaccine were about 38% less likely to suffer a heart attack or stroke after a COVID infection in the next 8 months. The Federal Reserve wraps up its latest policy meeting today, the first with Kevin Warsh as chair of the central bank. Economists say they don't expect the Fed to make any changes to U.S. interest rates, with inflation in the economy still elevated. The war with Iran has pushed up oil and gas prices, though energy prices have been moving lower since President Trump announced an agreement to end the war with Iran. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Pew Charitable Trusts, sharing about the state of housing in America on the After the Fact podcast, available at pewtrusts.org/afterthefact, and the Doris Duke Foundation.
It is 8:08 here on the Wednesday morning show. I'm Andrew DeZingel here with Heidi Holton. Northern Kamee Radio's Board of Directors meets at 12:30 p.m. Monday, June 22nd on Zoom. This is an open meeting. Members of the general public are invited to attend. For more information, email comments at kaxe.org or call 218-326-1234. During business hours, regular meetings of our Board of Directors are held the fourth Monday of the month. The board's meeting schedule is available at kaxe.org.
I want to remind you that the Beltrami Block Party is in downtown Bemidji. It's a week from Saturday, June 27th, put on by KEXE, KBXE, Bridget's Pub, and Keg and Cork. It's live free music with Eric Koskinen and David Huckfeldt, Little Fevers, and more, as well as food and beverages on Beltrami Avenue. You can find more on KEXE's Facebook page, made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
And we receive support from Hug Hydronics, committed to making in-floor heating simple, providing in-floor heating solutions for both commercial and residential. More information at HUGHydronics.com. WeatherTech.com.
Showers today are expected through the day and into the evening with possible thunderstorms. Cloudy skies, 60 to 65 across the region. Southeast winds 5 to 10. Gusts could get up to 20. Tonight, it is looking like lows in the upper 40s. And by tomorrow, mid to upper 60s with partly sunny skies.
It's time now for Bright Spot, a chance to highlight good things happening across northern Minnesota. Bemidji will be sending two athletes to the 2026 Special Olympics USA Games, which begin this Saturday in the Twin Cities. Join us now are Kristen and Jody Sandmeyer to talk more about it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here.
So what can you tell us about what is happening tomorrow for the send-off?
Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, we are meeting at Lucky Dogs, and we are going to send off Katie and her sister, Lisa. So Katie is an athlete, and Lisa is a unified partner. They were going to form a team in bowling. And so we're going to start at Lucky Dogs, have a presentation by the mayor, do some other little things, and then we're headed over to Big River Scoop. And then we're going to wave them goodbye as they head to the cities to get ready to go compete at the National Games.
So tell us a little more. So they are in bowling. How are they preparing? How long have they been preparing?
So almost 2 years ago now, they did an application through the process and they were interviewed. And then they were selected about a year ago. So they've been going to the cities once a month to bowl with their teammates. There's 20 bowlers total.
Oh, wow.
And so with the coaches. And so they've been headed down there once a month, practicing, getting ready, meeting their teammates. They've been at Blaine because they're bowling at Blaine for nationals. And so they are going down and they are getting ready to bowl, and they will bowl as a team. And so on Wednesday next week, they bowl together. And so their score is together. They're a unified partner team.
So for it begins this Saturday, what do the athletes do while they're waiting for their events? Like, do they stay in the cities up until their event?
So they will leave on Friday and they will head to the cities, and they're staying at the U of M. So all the athletes from across the nation will come in on Friday. And so approximately 4,000 or so athletes will be arriving at the U of M to stay in their dorms. And so they'll go to opening. They have activities all day Sunday, or on Saturday, sorry. Sunday they practice, and then Monday they will be going to the bowling alley to watch their teammates compete. And then, so that's Monday and Tuesday, and Wednesday they will compete. And so there's lots of activities for them. There's an athlete village that athletes can go to and do different activities, meet celebrities, have their pictures taken, do crafts, etc. There's also healthy athletes, so they can go do a whole bunch of different health checks to make sure everything is okay. And so there are so many things going on in the cities. They can also go to different venues and watch other Team Minnesota athletes compete in swimming or track or whatever events they want to. There's 16 different events happening.
So this is nationals in Minnesota. It's a big deal to be in the state, right?
It's a big deal to be in the state. The first nationals were back in 2006. They've been in Ames, Iowa. They've been in Nebraska. They've been in the Florida, Seattle. They've been all over. But this is the first time that the national games have been in Minnesota. We hosted the World Games back in 1991. But otherwise, we haven't held any major event for Special Olympics since 91. So this is a big deal.
And how often do the national games happen?
National summer games are every 4 years. So the next one in 2030 is out in Ohio. And so to be selected, we've only had a total of four other athletes other than Katie and Lisa be selected since 2006. So this is a big deal to be selected to go.
How are you guys involved in Special Olympics? Why are you involved?
I have been involved in Special Olympics since I was 12 when it started back in 1984. I was part of the first track team coach section. I coached at that 91 games, and so I was part of that when it was at opening ceremony was held at the Metrodome, and all the excitement. I was a track coach, and then I've just stayed coaching ever since then. And so I have watched many athletes go to Worlds or go to Nationals, help them with that. I love Special Olympics. It has been part of my life now for 43 years, and so it's been an amazing thing. So watching all the development and the growth in everybody, and so because I was doing that, we're going to go down and work. So Kristen is my daughter. We're going to go work the whole week. So we leave on Friday to go work and volunteer the entire week. So we're working 13-hour days to do access control and help with athletes to make sure it's a safe, great environment for them.
Well, Kristen, you're smiling. So are you not just being dragged to this? Are you excited to be going to the
No, I'm really excited. It's kind of fun to work with these athletes. So it's going to be an experience. Like, Mom has been down the and like done something like this, but I haven't.
Yeah. And it's, there's some big names coming in. We talked about Jon Batiste. This is for like the opening ceremonies.
Yeah.
And
so they will be performing in Huntington Bank Stadium for opening ceremonies.
Wow. And you'll get to do that too.
Yes. We got tickets to go into it, but we are working before that.
For access control. So we will control all the access for the athletes in the holding area in Mariucci Arena beforehand.
Wow.
So for people that would themselves like to get involved with helping out with Special Olympics events, how would they go about doing that?
So if you want to help out in the Bemidji area, please call me because we are in need of volunteers. We offer a variety of sports throughout the year, whether it's track or swimming or bowling and softball. And there's some other sports that we used to offer, but due to coaching shortages, we can't anymore. And so we are way open to any of those. Please contact me. Bemidji Special Olympics at gmail.com is a great way to email me and get in contact. And then we can set you up and get you started volunteering or coaching, or if you want to help out plan activities, we're always open to any of that.
So all kinds of different ways to volunteer.
Absolutely. There's one day events, or there's long-term events if you want to help for an entire season, or if you want to help for just one day, put on a swim meet or help one day for a track meet, or like planning tomorrow's activity for the send-off.
So Jody, for someone who's maybe never attended a Special Olympics competition, how would you describe it? What's the feeling like?
It's an amazing thing because it's one of those where everybody walks away with a smile. It's everybody is a winner. Everybody has that opportunity to succeed and be successful. And I love the smiles every time. And that's what keeps me coming back, because I can have a stressful day at work and then I can go and go to practice, go to an event, and it's just that wonderful smile, the appreciation, the high fives, the isn't this a great day? It's an uplifter for me. And so that's where I keep it all the time.
The random hugs we get from our swimmers.
That's why you're in it.
Yes, the wet hugs that like go on your clothes after they get out of the pool. Yes.
But it's worth it. And that's what the smiles are. And that's the way you keep going back.
Yeah.
And so it begins this Saturday. How long does it go till?
It starts this Saturday and it continues until the closing ceremony, which is next Friday, the 26th. And so everything basically is at the U of M except for a few events up in Blaine, which is the bowling and the soccer.
So sounds like Katie and Lisa, they'll be competing in bowling. They deserve a big send-off. So I bet you want a lot of people to show up tomorrow.
Please come tomorrow. 11 o'clock, we're going to meet at Lucky Dogs. Come send them off. This is a huge honor for them, huge opportunity. They are so excited. Come help us send them off with a great round.
All right. Well, thank you, Kristen and Jody, for joining us this morning. You can be part of the community send-off tomorrow. The program begins at 11:30 at Lucky Dogs, followed by a gathering at the Paul and Babe statues at 12:30. Bright Spot is made possible with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, we're going to play a tune for you now. This is from Minnesota artist Rachel Wire. The song is called Run.
Always said, talking to you. Waiting round for you, my friend. I fought enough, now I can barely fend. Well,
this is the Up North Look Back, where we're digging into the local news archives from 1976, the year KAXE was born. I'm Chelsea Perkins. It's the week of June 15th. A state of emergency was declared by President Ford in mid-June 76 in 40 Minnesota counties where crops were severely damaged by drought. The counties were mostly in the western and central areas of the state, including Cass, Crow Wing, and Beltrami. The president of the National Ayrshire Breeders Association said cattle herds already had been cut beyond normal, and consumers could expect to pay higher prices for milk, butter, and cheese because of the drought. A spokesman for the Federal Disaster Assistance Administration said the federal aid would include funds for transportation of hay to drought-stricken areas for dairy and beef cattle. A wall of a condemned Aiken school building from 1901 collapsed onto another part of the school while being demolished in June of 76. The wall fell into a section of the school that was built in 1965. It crashed through the roof of two classrooms. No one was injured, but the demolition workers were then trying to figure out how to finish the demolition without more damage. Members of the Grand Rapids School Board had some discussion in June of 76 about teacher recruitment. Some felt too many teachers were being hired from Bemidji State University and that there should be a wider recruitment of teachers. Dr. Bob Volkler was asked why he was recommending a candidate from State University College in New York. He responded by saying, "New York is about as far away as we could get." The teacher in question, however, already lived in the area. The Crosby City Council on June 14, 1976, heard a report from Frank Perpich regarding a survey he had made of trees with Dutch elm disease on city property. Perpich said there were far more diseased trees than anticipated in the city park, in the Franklin School area, and along some boulevards. The trees were marked and would be removed, city officials said. It was not yet determined how many trees on private property were also affected. Several boats were floating unattended June 17, 1976 in Pekegama Lake after some high winds. Most were claimed by their owners, but the owners were not found and no registration existed for a sailboat and a fiberglass canoe. The Itasca County Sheriff's Office was asking the boat owners to contact them. A 75-cent increase for garbage pickup was approved by the Grand Rapids City Council in mid-June 76. The increase raised the cost from $4.25 to $5. For the $5 fee, two garbage cans would be emptied twice a week. The increase was said to be needed due to rising costs since the last raise was approved in 1973. Meanwhile, the Bemidji Pioneer reported on the first recycling pickup trial in the U.S. The EPA trial was in two Massachusetts cities, and residents sorted their garbage between paper, glass, metal, and other waste. A separate truck would pick up their recycling from the homes. The piece was titled "Environmental Good News in Garbage." The Grand Rapids High School varsity debate team lost in the fifth round of the national tournament in Colorado Springs. Out of over 100 teams that went to the national tournament, only 30 made it to the fifth round. The Grand Rapids Herald described the coach Merlin R. Botter as looking like a young Santa Claus. Eugene Bradfield received the Rose and J. Phillip Award as one of five outstanding handicapped Minnesotans in 1976. Bradfield was a professor of psychology and a counselor at Bemidji State University. He became blind as a teenager. The award came with a $300 gift. The Brainerd Dispatch reported on the results of On Wheels Day, a special recreation event for youngsters in Brainerd that June of 76. Children competed in fastest bike and coasting in multiple age groups. Jason Franzen won the fastest trike, and Mark McDonald won the wheelbarrow race. Northland news outlets displayed numerous Father's Day 1976 specials. Quadna was offering a Ranchero outdoor barbecue. A $6 prime rib of beef Father's Day special was offered at the Harbor in Grand Rapids. Dads could skate for free at Nisswa Roller Arena. And the Brainerd Elks Dining Room offered a $1.50 Father's Day brunch. Thanks to the archives of the Bemidji Pioneer, Brainerd Dispatch, and the Grand Rapids Herald Review. As these local stories unfolded 50 years ago, KAXE was getting its start. Keep people-powered radio going into the future in northern Minnesota with your support now at KAXE.org.
50 ways to leave your lover. You just slip out the back, Jack. Making no plans.
That is a look back up north report here on the Wednesday morning show. My name is Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton.
That's right. Some of those headlines, they are similar to today. It's fun to hear from our news team, and you know they're enjoying going to historical societies and looking back at papers from 1976. We'll be doing that all throughout the year as we celebrate 50 years of KEXE. In fact, Andrew and Heather and Julie Crabb will be exploring 1976 movies coming up a week from Saturday. You'll hear it at 9 a.m.
Yep, we're going to be talking Rocky. We're going to be talking Network. We're going to be talking Taxi Driver. Wow. All the President's Men.
Oh, of those, I don't even think I ever saw Rocky.
You never saw Rocky?
I saw Taxi Driver. I've seen All the President's Men so many times.
What about Network? Network is my second favorite movie of all time.
No, and I should see that. Yes. That is a good point. I should see Rocky, too. Maybe I saw Rocky. It's just such a part of popular culture. It's one of those that's hard to be like, did I actually see it, or do
the first one's fascinating because it became a franchise, but mm-hmm. the first one is such a grounded look at a boxer.
Okay.
Much more influenced by the 70s styles of filmmaking.
Okay.
Where the other ones become more cartoonish as they go on, kind of thing.
And Sylvester Stallone, he wrote Rocky, didn't
yeah.
he?
And he directed it too, and that was like part of the deal. I can't remember who produced it. I want to say MGM, but he's like, you can't have my script unless you let me direct it.
Wow. Because you kind of think of him as being the tough guy leading man, not mm-hmm. that he has that kind of, I think that's something people don't realize about him, that he wrote and directed it and mm-hmm. that he has that kind of creativity in him as well. People need to know more about Sylvester Stallone. I'm just kidding.
I've been saying that since day one.
Have you? And Taxi Driver. Oh, my gosh.
Which I just revisited, and what a movie.
Yeah.
And that's an early Scorsese movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I do still think you want to put in Ode to Billy Joe since you played the album today, but I know. It may not hit. Are you going to do any that were not... You going to mention some of them that were not the... hits or not the big names like you just said?
We're going to touch on some of them. We've got 10 we're really focused on, then we're going to do some Oscar talk of that year.
Okay.
And then we'll do, if there's time, some, you know, snippets of other movies we've seen from 1976 we enjoyed. Like for me, Marathon Man, starring Dustin Hoffman and Laurence Olivier.
Okay. I was just looking to see if there is any, you tend to not be, you're not as much of a comedy kind of guy.
That's not true. Oh, okay. I like comedies. They're just, they don't make them anymore.
I had a feel. Okay, all right. I'm taking a look. I was going to see what 1976 comedies came out. Are there any comedies in your list?
Bad News Bears.
Okay.
Well, that's really kind of the only one that I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay.
I mean, Silver Streak came out that year, but we're probably not going to dive into that one. I've never seen it, so.
Okay. Looks like the original Freaky Friday came out in that year.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So, interesting. That'll spur people on to be watching some, a Mel Brooks movie came out that year, silent movie.
Yeah, which I've never seen that one either. I guess I've seen Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And Blazing Saddles. Something? But I haven't seen History of the World Part 1, silent movie. What's the Alfred Hitchcock one? It's not Suspense, but something like that.
Okay.
But I haven't seen that one either.
Well, get ready for that. We'll be talking 1976 movies. That's coming up a week from Saturday at 9 a.m. You are tuned in right now to the Wednesday Morning Show. Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate your texts, and you can continue to do that, 218-326-1234.
And coming up in a bit, we're going to be talking about the Minnesota Northwoods Writers Conference Evening Readers. They'll be going on next week here in Bemidji. We receive support from the Lake Country Journal, lifestyle magazine since 1997, a local publication sharing stories from the heart of Minnesota about the places to go, things to do, and people to know in Lake Country. LakeCountryJournal.com.
And thanks to Move It Real Estate Group for their support, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you, more at MoveItRealEstate.com.
And we receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors, with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at ColeraineBank.com, member FDIC. And we heard the news from 50 years ago. Now it's time to hear about the news of today.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. The U.S. Department of Justice is charging 15 Minnesotans with, quote, conspiracy to impede or injure federal officers and related charges pertaining to the efforts to violently oppose immigration law enforcement during Operation Metro Surge. The Minnesota Reformer reports the charges were announced in an 11 a.m. Tuesday press conference by Daniel Rosen, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Minnesota, and Michael McCarthy, the Special Agent in Charge of Homeland Security Investigations. The charges describe a range of tactics allegedly used by the defendants, such as, quote, stalking federal agents and using blocks of ice to slow their convoys. The prosecutor showed photos of protesters blocking streets and creating barricades near the Whipple Federal Building. No comment was made on how many federal agents were injured because of the actions described in the charges. The Associated Press reports 12 defendants were arrested Tuesday, two remain at large, and one was already in custody. The charges come months after Operation Metro Surge brought thousands of agents to the Twin Cities, which set off mass protests and the fatal shootings of two U.S. citizens. Activity from Immigration and Customs Enforcement continues in north central Minnesota. The Park Rapids Enterprise reports one of the co-founders of Vallarta's Mexican Grill, Sergio Barajas, was detained by federal authorities Monday morning while he was at Anytime Fitness. An eyewitness told the Enterprise that the situation, which involved agents in five vehicles in the parking lot, was peaceful. Barajas opened Vallarta's in downtown Park Rapids in 2012 with Pedro Unzueta. Both men are from Mexico. The Park Rapids activity follows reported detainments in Bemidji late last week, where work crews were reportedly detained from various storm-impacted job sites. Repeated inquiries for confirmation from ICE have not yet been returned. A Minnesota nonprofit is offering a $25,000 reward for information on a Wadena cold case. Carla Beth Anderson, a 23-year-old woman described as a vulnerable adult, was last seen returning to her Wadena apartment around 8 p.m. November 13, 1987, after an evening with her mother and stepfather. After she didn't report to work the next day or answer multiple phone calls, Wadena police officers responded to her apartment. They found no signs of a break-in, no indications of a struggle, with the apartment door still locked and her purse inside. The only things missing were Anderson's apartment keys and her Hardee's jacket. The nonprofit Spotlight on Crime announced the reward in a Monday press conference in Wadena. A person coming forward with information that leads to the whereabouts of Anderson and the identity of those responsible for her nearly 40-year disappearance could receive up to $25,000. In a news release, Wadena investigators, quote, do not believe that Carla would have chosen to disappear and are unaware of a motive for someone to harm her, and that no witnesses to aid the investigation have yet been found.
Nearly a year after a devastating derecho storm caused widespread damage in the city of Bemidji and surrounding areas, one local leader was recently recognized for his short-term and long-term efforts along the long road to recovery. Leaders Link, a leadership nonprofit founded by former CNN correspondent Kathleen Koch, announced earlier this year that Bemidji Mayor George Prince was the winner of this year's Tommy Longo Leadership Award for his disaster response. Prince was nominated for the competitive national award by the League of Minnesota Cities. Executive Director Luke Fisher described the league's decision to nominate Prince, who serves on its board of directors and is a trustee for its insurance trust board.
He remained visible, accessible, and engaged as the recovery efforts unfolded, and he communicated openly with residents to ensure that people had some sense that things were going to be okay, even though they were dealing with the worst.
During his acceptance speech Monday evening in the council's chambers, Prince said while he was honored to accept it, the recognition belongs to more than one person.
In the weeks that followed the storm, I saw a community come together in a way I had never seen before. Each person and organization doing their part.
Beltrami County Emergency Management Director Chris Muller, Bemidji Fire Chief Justin Sherwood, United Way Executive Director Danae Alamano were just some of those who made remarks Monday on the various elements of storm response that continues today. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
And that was a new single from Sarah Cahoon with the song Say Something from her new album, I Have Missed You All These Years. You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm here with Heidi Holton.
Support for programming this morning comes from the Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids. They feature Rich Mattson and Jermaine Gemberling Monday, June 22nd as part of the Martini Monday Music Series. Music begins at 5, reservations at 218-326. I bet I've got some light on the screen here. 2600.
And we receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering a workshop in June, Mixed Media Portrait with Pamela Edivald, on June 19th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 9 Central Street West in Bagley. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
We're very excited. There is sun in downtown Bemidji, but we may be seeing rain and thunderstorms throughout the day and into the evening. Already got a little bit of rain. And thanks for joining us today. We sure need it.
And the Minnesota Northwoods Writers Conference returns this year on the BSU campus. And with it comes the Evening Readers series from guest authors. Here to talk more about it is Sean Hill. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you all for having me. I'm so excited to be on the air and talk about the Evening Reading series. Last summer, we were planning our 13th conference, and as everyone in the listening area knows, a windstorm kind of took that away. So we're back this year, and the reading series is free and open to the public. It's part of the conference, but it's a part of the conference where the local Bemidji community and surrounding area, they can come and sort of participate and take in the people that we bring up here to teach the workshops. We have four nights of reading this summer, starting Tuesday, June 23rd, and ending on Friday, June 26th. Each year we sort of adjust the conference according to what's happening in the world and in our lives. And this year we're having six faculty that are reading across those 4 days. So we're sort of doubling up on faculty reading. So there'll be two readers every night. And because we have six faculty and four nights, we've invited one of our community members, Deborah Stone, who lives in the Twin Cities, but has just had a book come out with the Minnesota Historical Society titled The House on Rondo. It's a YA novel, and she'll be reading from that on Tuesday with Tony Jensen. No, sorry, Wednesday with Tony Jensen. I'm going to start from the top, though, and let you know sort of what's happening day by day here real quick. Douglas Kearney and Deborah Magpie Erling will be reading on Tuesday. Douglas is reading poetry. He's teaching our poetry workshop this year, one of them at least. But Douglas is a multi-talented writer. He's a poet, an essayist, a librettist, and a performer. And so he's going to open up, he and Deborah will open up the readings this year. Deborah is a fiction writer, who's published two novels, Perma Red, which is on the Atlantic's Great American Novels list, and most recently, The Lost Journals of Sacagawea, which won an American Book Award as well as a Montana Book Award. Both of their work is incredibly moving, and they inhabit it and embody it, in, especially in Doug's case, to the fullest. Tony Jensen will be reading nonfiction. She's the author of Carrie, a memoir on survival on stolen land, and was a New York Times editor's choice book. All of our writers are award-winning writers for their writing and for their teaching, but you're coming for the writing, so please come and hear these talented writers. Deborah Stone, as I said, YA novel, The House on Rondo, was an honorable mention for the Forward Indies Book Award. That's Wednesday. Thursday, we'll have Joni Tevis, who has been to the conference since 2012, no, 2013, when we put on the first conference in this sort of new iteration where I'm director. She's an incredible nonfiction writer. This will be her third or fourth time at the conference. She is the last time she read at the conference was one of the most moving experiences I think I've had at one of the evening reading series. Mm-hmm. I just want to see what she does again this year. I want to be in the room when she does her magic. Her latest book of essays is titled The World is on Fire. And it's just these essays about community and the archive and just really incredible moving work. And I will be reading this year. It's the first for the conference. I have a new book out that just came out in March. And I usually sort of stay in my administrator lane, but this year I think I'm going to step out. The staff sort of encouraged me, like, maybe you should read. You've never done this before. So I'm going to read at the conference this year with Joni on Thursday. Just a little taste of my new collection of essays or poetry and fiction. And then Friday, we'll wrap up with Jennifer Forrester and Lely Longsoldier. They're both poets. Jennifer has been a part of the conference during the pandemic years when we were online. And I've wanted to bring Jennifer to Bemidji since then. And last year was going to be the time, but we're having her this year because last year didn't happen. She is an incredible poet. Her most recent book is titled The Maybe Bird. And Lely Longsoldier is really her first time at the conference. She's the poet, the author of Whereas, which was won a National Book Critics Circle Award in 2018. That was her first collection. The next collection is titled We, and it's one of the most anticipated books of the year. It'll be out this fall, but I'm sure we'll get a taste of it. Again, all award-winning poets, and to their credits, they have National Endowment for the Arts Awards, Whiting Fellowships, Griffin Prizes, incredible list of recognitions for these writers and their work. And I'm excited to be in the audience, and I'm also excited to be participating this year to actually share my work, something I haven't done since we started this back in 2012 or 2013.
Yeah, so I've been to previous evening reading sessions before, and you're right, the atmosphere of it just feels so special, especially during the poets just reading their own work to the audience. There's something about poetry, and you hear it in the person's actual voice who wrote it, and it's a emotionally overcoming experience, I would describe it as, and it's fascinating.
Yeah. I love going to readings, particularly poetry readings, for that reason. But just sort of sinking into a novelist or short story writer's work as they're presenting it as well, like that's part of what happens with the narrative when it comes. But then poetry, it's like a fireworks show in some ways. It's like, oh, that happened, and then it's like, oh, now here's another thing, here's another display, and then hopefully they plan their show like, and then there's a finale. And Douglas Kearney is one of those poets who does that. I was gonna say, oh, if you could come to one, come to Doug's, but like all of it, like come to everyone. Like I said, the last time Joni read, she'd planned this thing secretly with her workshop where as part of the reading, because she was talking about being in band and down at Florida State. And she started reading, like toward the end of it, there's this part where she reads something and then someone else chimes in with her and then someone else chimes in. It becomes this sort of harmony of these people from her workshop around the audience to start. We're like, where? Someone just started reading? Like, what's going on? This is a thing. And she planned it and it was... it was really chilling. I'm getting kind of goosebumps now thinking about it. And I'm like, oh, what is she going to do this year? I don't know. Yeah, she's incredible. And the way in which I'm thinking about, like, a reading I went to with Toni Jensen a year or so ago. She was visiting professor in Missoula, and she just held the audience in her hand with her nonfiction. And I've seen Jennifer Forrester read, and you know, there's this gravitas about her and the work. That's incredible. And I've never seen Layli Long Soldier read, but I'm just so excited because of Whereas and because of what she's doing with this new book that, like I said, one of the most anticipated books of the year. So it's going to be a great series this year.
So one thing I was wondering, the conference started in 2013. Mm-hmm. Was there always the evening reading series from the beginning?
Yes. So there's kind of two beginnings, if I may. Susan Carol Hauser, who was beloved professor at BSU, along with Rose Weaver, another beloved professor at BSU, they started the conference back in 2003. The first one they put on was 2003. And they invited me to work with them on it in 2004. And so we sort of worked together putting on conferences till it went into hiatus in 2008. There are certain things that Susan built into the conference when she envisioned it. And that one of those things was the evening reading series and having people from the Bemidji community come to take part in what was happening at BSU. And when I started the conference back up after the hiatus in 2013, I was like, we have to continue this. This is an integral part of what we do. And so, yeah, it's always been a part of the conference, the evening reading series.
These are acclaimed writers and authors, as you said, award-winning. What's experience like for them coming to Northern Minnesota and being in Bemidji?
It varies. A lot of times, you know, that'll be their first time in Northern Minnesota. But then sometimes, like, Toni Jensen has connections, local connections, like family from the Twin Cities who, like, live and work up here. And so she's coming and spending time with family. Douglas Kearney has spent time in the Twin Cities and now teaches at the U. And when he came in 2022, I think it might have been his first time that far north. Mm-hmm. But you know, he's been there, and so I think he immediately wanted to come back. You know, at that 22 conference, he was like, he and also. So there's these chemistries, right? So Joni Tevis was there that year, one of her returning years, because like I said, she came in 2013. And she's had some Minnesota connections too. She's from South Carolina, but she was an Edelstein fellow at the U years and years ago, and so lived in the Twin Cities. And so coming to Bemidji in 2013 and then sort of coming, you know, a few times over the years, like it was just, it's kind of a homecoming, you know, And in 22, they were both like, we want to come back and can you bring us together? so just sort of seeing that kind of energy, it's great. And the crowd from the conference and the people who come in from the community in that event, that sort of open and free event, again, open and free, it's a beautiful thing to see and sort of be, you know, a part of, especially if you're standing up in front of them doing the thing. It's like, oh, these people are here for this. And this part of what makes a series and successful is the people who attend it, sort of cultivating an audience, right? And we've done that. Like, Susan started that in 2003, and we've carried that on since then. And so it's a really good room to be in.
What I've always liked about these events too is that the guest speakers will kind of give you insight of what their mindset was or what they were going through their life when they were writing either these poems or these short stories. And it just adds an extra layer to what they're reading about it, because you are getting into their mindset, and it's a fascinating insight of to, like, not only what they're writing about, but the writing process in general, I think.
Yes. Yeah. That's, again, as a writer, that's one of my favorite parts of going to readings. It's like, oh, how is this? Okay. A little bit of a peek behind the curtain.
And then everyone has, like, their own stories too. So if you go every night, you're hearing all these different ways of people arriving to how they create something, which I always think is a fascinating part of the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So where will the readings be taking place?
They'll be at Hagsauer Auditorium, Hagsauer 150, at 7 o'clock, 7 PM every evening.
All right. And
that's
free and open to everyone.
It's free and open to everyone. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Sean, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah.
If you have questions, you can always contact us at 218-326-1234. I'm assuming there's a website folks can find for the Minnesota Northwoods Writers Conference, and should list all the authors and books there. I was just trying to make a list as he was talking about them, but I'm like, okay, I'll be able to find it.
And that is Heidi Holt, and I'm Andrew DeZingle, wrapping up things here on the Wednesday morning show before we hand things over to Kari Hedlund for Headwaters. Support comes from Watermark Art Center in downtown Bemidji, featuring exhibits by Indigenous artists in the Mekanon Gallery. The center is accessible and open to all. More at watermarkartcenter.org.
We'd love to hear from you. Our question of the week is about your favorite flavor or ice cream treat. Or place, 218-326-1234.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, celebrating 50 years of People Power Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Time now for Headwaters with Kari Hedlund.
If you had one life, just one life, and it wasn't the life you wanted, would you still live it? If you had one dream, just one dream, and the dream became a nightmare, would you still dream it?